This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, it's Mraz. A happy Wednesday to you. DA continues his trek through Boise, Idaho. He's up in the mountains. We talk Urban Meyer, the best audio of the day, including a great pizza bagel debate, a champ, a chump, and we're stunned to a news. The Boise trek continues now with the best of today's show.
We start with college football, and we start with USC, because as I talked about yesterday, as you probably already have gleaned as a college football fan or an NFL fan or just somebody that generally has a brain, USC is one of the best jobs, if not the best job in college football. There's like five things about the USC job that make it, if it's not the best, it's one of the two or three best. And it has not performed like that since Pete Carroll left. Number one, you're in perhaps the most fertile recruiting ground in America. Put it right in there with the best parts of Texas and South Florida. But Southern California puts out absolutely amazing five-star talent year after year after year, and specifically quarterbacks. Everybody goes to Southern California for quarterbacks. So if all you do is get one five-star quarterback every other year, if you get one of the two or three best quarterbacks in America that are largely coming out of Southern California every other year, you should basically have a Heisman Trophy candidate every single season. Number two, it is Los Angeles, which is a draw, especially today with NIL. If you're talking about earning some cash as a kid, as a player, you go to Los Angeles, there's a lot of spigots of money open to you. Number three, the weather. Not hard to recruit to Southern California if you're not keeping kids there. Not hard to bring them through, see some palm trees, see the weather, see the ocean, and be like, want a ball here? Number four, the history. Heisman trophies, national championships, number one draft picks. Hey, it's not that long ago that Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart, Carson Palmer, etc., are lighting things up and USC's winning national championships. And they are completely driven as an alumni and fan base to be great at football. This is not a basketball school that happens to try to want to be good at football. This is not a campus that doesn't care, is apathetic about football. No, they want their program to be back to where it used to be. So you have all of these things now working together, and an AD that is entrusted with getting football back. Urban Meyer was in Los Angeles last year. Urban Meyer is one of the greatest college football coaches ever to walk. Now, he might not be your cup of tea. He's not a lot of people's cup of tea. In fact, he's not some people's cup of tea from where he actually had won as well, like in Florida. But in terms of success, you cannot argue with the type of success he has had. We all figured he wanted that USC job. We all figured he was lurking around Los Angeles, waiting, knocking on the door. Hey, is the job open yet? Hey, Clay, you sick of this job yet? Hey, USC, what do you think? Oh, you don't need anybody right now? Oh, no problem. I'll be over here in the bathroom. Then he takes this Jaguars job in the offseason. The Jaguars just got pounded by the team we thought would be the worst in the NFL, the Houston Texans. They just got pounded by the worst team of the NFL, we thought. So the Jaguars obviously could be the worst team of the NFL by a long shot. And there's already grumblings that the Jaguars players are unhappy. There was a report over the weekend that the culture in Jacksonville is so bad right now that the players did not even want to come out and be spirited and fired up for week number one. It's week one. And you can't help but think whether Urban Meyer is already questioning his decision to go to Jacksonville, considering his dream job is open. He's obviously been listed by a couple of lists of potential candidates for USC. Would Urban Meyer leave this job in the middle of year number one? Would he leave this job at the end of year number one? Would he scoot and skedaddle like a Bobby Petrino writing a note in the locker room saying, so long, to get to this job? It is where we begin. Your cold open.
Well, look, I reported at length on Sunday about the problems inside that organization collectively as a staff, beginning with Urban Meyer. The inability to adjust to the pro game, difficulties getting installations done on time, difficulties getting an off-season schedule put out on time, not understanding how to handle preseason games, belittling coaches, treating every setback as if it's the end of the world. Morale was so low going into that game. And there has not been cohesion among that staff, particularly between the college guys and the pro guys. So, no, it was not shocking to see them a complete mess on offense on Sunday. If you'd been talking to people in that building, there was a lot of concern about their preparedness for this game and how this was going to unfold.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heart-rending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
Uh-oh. That's our friend Jason Lockenfora from CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He also said, quote, Urban has everyone looking over their shoulders already. He becomes unhinged way too easily. He doesn't know how to handle losing even in the preseason. He loses it and wants to take over the drills himself. It's not good. Urban's always been better served in the college game. It's worked for him there. He's won national championships there. He's built up programs at Utah, at Florida, at Ohio State. He's done it everywhere, even Bowling Green. You look at his stats, you look at his wins with both the Gators and the Buckeyes. Here's his seasons. In Gainesville, 9-3, 13-1, 9-4, 13-1, 13-1, 8-5. Ohio State 12-0, 12-2, 14-1, 12-1, 11-2, 12-2, 10-1. This guy belongs in college. But I get it if he didn't want to take any job and only wanted to take the elite jobs. But Urban Meyer should have waited for that USC gig. He should have waited because what he did was he got antsy. He saw the money in Jacksonville. He got bowled over by Tony Khan and Shad Khan. Tony Khan specifically can be very energetic and easily can sell you on something. That's why he's selling AEW wrestling these days. And Urban Meyer jumped too quickly and now has to regret that decision. And do I think that Urban Meyer is going to leave tomorrow for the USC job? No. USC is going to have its interim head coach the rest of this season. But I'm sure Urban Meyer is thinking about leaving after the season, Jacksonville. I'm sure of it. Because look at Urban Meyer's, quote, integrity or lack thereof. Does this look like a guy that's going to see this project through? Hell no. Now, I'm not saying USC wants to pry Urban Meyer away from Jacksonville because who knows? By the end of the season, maybe some of the bloom is off the rose when it comes to Urban Meyer. But do I think that Meyer is already wondering if the NFL is a fit for him? Yes. Do I think he noticed that USC job is open? Double yes. And do I think there's somewhere in his crevices of his mind that he's thinking, boy, you know what? How do we align this to where sometime in December, the college football season is over, we've got about two games left, and we're going to be a 2 or 3 win campaign, and I slide out the back door and go to the premier job in college football, and I win national championships there in short order? Hell yeah, I do. Absolutely, I believe that's the consideration right now with Urban Meyer. So could he? Would he leave? The answer is yes. And if he doesn't, how about that time biting him in the ass? He could have waited 6 more months and had the USC job to himself. Instead, he might get passed over, and whoever gets that job might be there for 10 years, and he's stuck in Jacksonville, losing 13 games a year. 855-212-4CBS. Or on Twitter, like I said, follow me and tweet at me, DA on CBS. Again, that's DA on CBS.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
We appreciate you being with us, and there's so many ways you can listen to the show. Of course, you can listen to us on our family of CBS Sports Radio affiliates, hundreds of them nationwide and north of the border. Also on Sirius XM Channel 206. And check us out on your phone. Use that handy little thing on your in your pocket. It usually takes pictures or scrolls Instagram for you, but it can also listen to CBS Sports Radio and the DA. Use the CBS Sports app. That's free. Use the Odyssey app. That's free as well. The Odyssey app, you can actually pause, rewind, and fast-forward audio there, including the mothership. Soundcheck begins with James Franklin, Penn State's head coach. How will he address rumors of the USC job?
As you guys know, I can't stand in any form of distraction. So I'll discuss this today with the leadership council so that we can make sure that all of our energy and all of our energy is on our preparation for Auburn. And that's how we'll handle it. I'm gonna talk to the leadership council today about it.
Yeah, it's a bad week to have any distractions because Auburn is on your schedule, and that's going to be one of your tougher matchups of the season. And Penn State, obviously, with an early solid start to its campaign, especially that win over Wisconsin, is in a spot where you can't really afford many slip-ups or trip-ups because you could be playing for a college football playoff spot by the end of the year. But James Franklin is the best candidate for this USC job. He is. James Franklin has done a very good job at Penn State. You know, at Vanderbilt, he resuscitated life into that program. Think about winning 9 games and a bowl game back-to-back seasons at Vandy. And then after that, he's gone to Penn State, and he's won 11 games 3 different times. Last year wasn't very good, but he's a guy that has gone to the near top, maybe been the second best program overall in the last 7 years in the Big Ten behind Ohio State. So Franklin, I think, enjoys the attention of the notoriety. I think he would do well with Los Angeles and all that comes with it. He's obviously a proven head coach. And I think if you are USC, you back up the Brinks truck and see what it's going to take to get James Franklin. I'm not saying Penn State's going to let you go. I'm not saying that Penn State's not going to try to make sure they match every dollar for dollar the USC gives you. But for the Trojans, James Franklin should be the number one candidate for that job. Soundcheck rolls on with Jordan Battle. This is an Alabama Crimson Tide safety. So give us some of Nick Saban's favorite sayings, Jordan.
Yeah, I've asked a couple of the other older guys about this, but do you have a favorite saying that Saban has, one of his little coaching, quips he has?
Not that I can think of right now because he has so many, but there are a few I like, and he always talking about touch D's or you know, suck on D's or all that.
No.
Ah! Huh. I did not expect Nick Saban's best quips to include suck on D's. Didn't expect that. Didn't think that was in the purview of Nick Saban's favorite sayings. And now I can't ever look at Nick Saban the same way ever again. 70-year-old Nick Saban, 70-plus-year-old Nick Saban is doing D's jokes. D-E-E-Z jokes. Is that right? Did I get that right, or am I dreaming here? It's the middle of the night in Idaho. It's 4:28 local time, so 70-year-old Nick Saban is not doing suck on D's jokes, I hope. Is that why Alabama trashed Miami in week number one? Because now Nick Saban's just doing deaf comedy jam?
Suck on D's or all that.
Why would you say that? Why would Jordan Battle say that? Why would that? Why would he say? Was that the SID in the back, sports information director, going, nope, 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 don't, no, don't say that, Jordan. Nope.
Nope.
Nope. Nope.
Nope.
Nope. Nope. Cut this off. Huh. Interesting. Had no idea that Nick Saban and Chris Tucker had so much in common. I guess that's the effect of Snoop on the program. Guys, it's LSU week. Suck on D's. Oh, all right, coach. We're ready to go now. And finally, here is the Marquette Marvel, Aiden Hatton, who hosts his own radio show on Marquette Student Radio called Games and Grub. And they were doing a segment based on some of our food opinions, and they brought up Connor Green's high ranking of pizza bagels. You might remember that Connor ranked pizza bagels in his top three favorite pizzas, frozen pizzas, of all time. Here's Aiden and his crew breaking that down.
Connor Green on CBS Sports Radio arguing that a pizza bagel is a frozen pizza. You ready for this, guys?
Pizza bagels are the underdog of the frozen pizza world. It's the offensive line of the pizza industry in general. Commonly forgotten, easily overlooked, but extremely, extremely important. You have a Super Bowl party, I got pizza bagels. A fantasy football draft, I have pizza bagels.
And I do agree that pizza bagels are pizza, right? Can we agree on, are pizza bagels pizza?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
However, at a Super Bowl party, at a fantasy draft, which many of you listeners probably had in the last week, bringing pizza bagels is like the Broncos going with Teddy Bridgewater. You're accepting mediocrity, a low ceiling. Give me some wings, a buffalo chicken dip, even some pigs in a blanket. Pizza bagels, they're more a chore to get rid of than a party favor. Next.
Let's bring in the Thictator. Mraz, are pizza bagels the Teddy Bridgewater of football foods?
This is a great, great, great take by Aiden. It really is, because when you think about it, they are. Because they'll never necessarily fail you, but you will never rise to an elite status where you know, hey, I'm walking with pizza bagels. I'm going to be a smash hit here. This is going to be the feature of a party. He's absolutely right. Pizza bagels are the most perfectly mediocre food that exists on the planet. And that was such a good way of putting it. Yes, you'll have a game versus a Giants defense like Teddy Bridgewater Sunday where, wow, these perfectly crispy. You timed out the temperature well at 350. Everything went right. But then every other time you're going to look around and you're going to see this next to, like you said, a wing, a mozzarella stick, you know, any kind of other appetizer. And you go, yeah, all right, I guess I'll throw a pizza bagel on here, but do I really need it? They absolutely are the Teddy Bridgewater of snacks.
Okay, but Aiden brings up a low ceiling. I think if you buy store-bought pizza bagels, there is a low ceiling. But I think if you make your own, there could be a much higher ceiling. You know, those mini bagels, okay, they can be fluffy, they can be doughy if they are baked correctly. If you add your own solid sauce, let's say you make your own sauce, or even if you buy a really good jarred sauce, then you add fresh mozzarella on top of that. You know, now you're talking maybe a few bacon bits, or honestly, if you make your own bacon, and then you tear that up, and you chop that up and put it on top. I think the problem is, if you're only going store-bought out of your grocer's freezer, it's a low ceiling.
But this is why it's a low ceiling, DA, because to have a high ceiling, there needs to be consistency. And everything you just broke down about making your own pizza bagels, think about how many things need to go right for it to be successful. You're not making your own bagels, so you may need to make sure you buy the perfect fluffy bagels that crisp up nice. That's not necessarily going to be the case every single time, even if you go to the same bagel or deli place. Even if you make your own sauce, look, I have an Italian wife who loves stirring that sauce on a Sunday. Sometimes a little too much sugar, a little too much salt, a little too little. It's just not the
same. Well,
that's
her problem.
But that's my point. You're talking about the bagels, the sauce, the cheese. Then you need to make sure that the oven is at the right temperature and you time it out to the right second.
That hard?
There are too many ifs that need to go right on a consistent basis for those pizza bagels to come out. Could Teddy Bridgewater win a playoff game? Yes. Can Teddy Bridgewater go 12-5 and win a Super Bowl? Think about how many times you need to perfect that with a pizza bagel, even on your own. It's too many question marks. He's absolutely right, Aiden.
Aiden fits in very well around here as he is comparing pizza bagels to Teddy Bridgewater in the Broncos offense. And that is your sound check. We are broadcasting live from McCall, Idaho, which is a couple of hours north of Boise, in the middle of the Payette National Forest, and it's just gorgeous here, absolutely gorgeous. I'm looking out over the deck and this beautiful lake in front of me, Lake Payette, and as the sun comes up in a couple of hours, it's just going to light up, and right now the stars are out, and it's just... it's breathtakingly gorgeous, and coming in to Boise later on today is the one and only Andrew Bogish, a kind sir. He's going to join me here in Boise starting tonight, and tomorrow morning we're going to be at Dutch Bros on Milwaukee, broadcasting live for everybody, and they're 24/7, folks, and so even though we are kicking things off at 4 a.m. local time here, we expect at least a few live audience members there at 4 a.m., and I am told we will have things to give out. We will have some prizes to give out, something if you are the first ones in the building at 4 a.m. Now, again, it's 24/7, so you can camp out from 3 a.m., 2 a.m. You can live there all day for all I care, but we need somebody there at 4 a.m. when we are there at Dutch Bros on Milwaukee tomorrow in Boise. But I'm up in McCall, and I'm going to tell you this, Bogues, after a day of fishing today in the middle of the wilderness, in fact, we're driving so far outside of Boise, we're going into the Pacific time zone today. I'll be in the Pacific time zone today. It's on the table I don't return, and so it's on the table you'll have to host the rest of the week from Boise.
I'm more concerned with tonight because it's a long day of travel. I am not a hearty young man. By the time I get to Boise, I'm going to want to eat and go to sleep. Are you going to make me do things tonight? Or are you going to be tired from fishing and want to crash as well?
God. Bogues, if I'm not asleep by 6 p.m. on the drive home from wherever we're going in the middle of the canyons, it's a win. My guess is... by the time I see you, I'm just going to be a zombie in between my sleeping. I mean, I'm not sleeping much as it is this week because, of course, we're starting the show 2 hours earlier than normal, and we're driving, and we're seeing, and we're doing. No, tonight we're not doing anything, okay? You'll be lucky if you see me tonight and I'm not, like, plastered on the floor somewhere.
Okay, good. All right, fine. And by the way, I feel a little bit like Sean. Now, I knew that Boise wasn't like a quick left after Pittsburgh, but what I didn't understand is, and you mentioned this, our flights go to Denver and then a switch to the plane to Boise. And only yesterday did I notice that the flight from Denver to Boise is scheduled for like 2 hours and 7 minutes.
Yeah.
I had no idea how much more west and north of Denver we were in Boise. It's a 12-hour drive between the two cities.
That's exactly right. It's a full 2 hours. I mean, I did that obviously the other day, and it's pretty much 2 hours. Let me tell you, this is how far off Mraz's geography was when he once upon a time said, "Isn't Boise like 2 hours past Cleveland?" When you're in Boise, you're 45 minutes from the Oregon border. You're 45 minutes from Oregon, Mraz thought we were 2 hours driving past Cleveland. He thought you could go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and in 2 hours be at the border of Oregon. I'm going to be in the Pacific time zone today. Mraz thought we were basically in Akron.
Do I need my passport? The flight says no, but I think I need to bring it just in case.
I'll tell you, it's a haul from New York, and here's the ultimate nip. There's no directs except one, which I thought I found, and I was super stoked, and I'm like, oh, there's a red eye, and there's a direct, and this is going to be great. It's seasonal for the summer and ended last week. We were late by like 6 days on the direct. 6 days. I think we were late on it. So, yeah, it's a journey. You better strap up. And everybody in Boise right now is like, yes, keep telling everybody across America how hard it is to get here, DA. Please keep telling them because they want this to be the best-kept secret in America, but it's not really a secret anymore, especially in the West Coast. But from the East Coast, oh, it's a haul. It's a freaking haul. My guess is that Chris Peterson and Brian Horsted and company didn't do a lot of recruiting on the East Coast because they tried to get a kid out to Boise. Kid would have been like, where am I going? It's 2 hours past Cleveland. That's what my favorite sports radio show said. No, sorry, son. It's actually nearly the... This morning we're from the Glass House in McCall, Idaho, a couple of hours north of Boise, beautiful mountain resort town on Lake Payette. Gorgeous. Going to do some fishing today in the canyons. I'm super stoked. If you want to follow along with the pictures and video and updated scenery from where I'm looking right now. In fact, I just posted a picture during the commercial break of what our set looks like. This hotel, boutique hotel called the Glass House, is wild. It was built in the 50s as an office for the local mill, and it's kind of like Brady Bunch meets mountain resort town. It's got this wild architecture and these amazing arches and these floor-to-ceiling glass windows, and it overlooks the lake. It is incredible. It's wild. I love it. Absolutely love it. And I just posted a picture, and it's pretty cool. Mraz says it looks like I'm broadcasting live from the bear den at the Hershey Lodge.
That's exactly what it looks like.
This place does need a bear throw rug, doesn't it? It feels like that's what this thing needs.
It feels like you should have like a cup of hot chocolate in front of you too as well.
It's freezing. It's freezing right now outside. Now we have the window open, the big sliding glass doors open in front of me so that I can watch the sun rise over the lake. But let me tell you, Mraz, it ain't 65 and humid like it is, or whatever that is 80, in New York.
82 degrees. It was in the pool yesterday, D.A. Now, let me ask you, did you pack, like, mud boots and stuff for this fishing trip? Was
got
there a lot of extra
boots.
Packing?
Got hiking boots, but nothing too crazy after that. Hiking boots and some fishing pants, but
fishing
not like waders,
pants.
But, you okay. know, pants that are not like you go to work in these pants, like something that you can throw hooks in. And
okay, that was a concern from Andrew Bogish, was how much extra you had to pack for this one specific day.
So check this out. They tell me that where we're going to go fishing today, there's sturgeon. And sturgeon are like, you can't pick that up with one person. That's like a four-person pickup. Like, you got to get out of the boat and pick up this fish with four people to hold it. And, yeah, so I don't know if we're going to catch any of that. I think we're going to probably fish for other things. But there are sturgeon in where we're going to go fishing. So this is honestly on the table. If I don't return because a sturgeon eats me or pulls me off the boat and I am left in the canyon, it's up to Bogish to host all the events from here on out.
DA was eaten. This is brought to you by Bacon.
It's Andrew Bogish with your CBS Sports Minute. Did you ever think you'd go on a fishing trip where the fish eats you? Well, that's what happened this week to my colleague, DA. This is Andrew Bogish. So that's where we are today. I'm really excited to be here, as you can probably tell, because I've been talking about it incessantly, but incredible hospitality, and I appreciate it very, very much. On Monday night, Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens gag away a 2-touchdown lead early, and then a touchdown lead late, and then a field goal lead with just seconds to play, and then, of course, botch it in overtime as well. Two lost fumbles for Lamar Jackson, and the Ravens have to go back to Baltimore licking their wounds 0-1 on the season. Now, here's a stat from the NFL on CBS. 51 NFL quarterbacks have thrown for 250 yards or more in a game over the last calendar year. So let's go back to the beginning of last season, okay? So from all of the 2020 season and then week one of the 2021 season, 51 NFL QBs have thrown for 250 yards. That includes such luminaries as P.J. Walker, my man Mike Glennon, Taysom Hill, Kyle Allen, Jeff Driscoll, Dwayne Haskins, C.J. Beathard, Brandon Allen. All of these guys have had at least one game of throwing for 250 yards or more. 51 QBs. A man not on that list, Lamar Jackson. Now, that's pretty astounding that Lamar Jackson in the last calendar year has not thrown for more than 250 yards in a game. In one game, not multiple times, one game. That is undoubtedly very concerning if you're looking at it from just a sheer stats standpoint and comparatively speaking to all these other bums, and he's been an NFL MVP. However, I will add that Lamar Jackson doesn't need to throw for 250 or more to be effective, to be a MVP caliber guy. And it's not like he's never done that. I mean, opening game against the Dolphins 2019, he threw for 324. He has hit more than 250 yards a couple of times, not a ton of times, but a couple of times. Unfortunately for this stat, did not do it last year. Hit 243 against the Jacksonville Jaguars late in the season. But it's been a while, been a minute, since he hit 250. But I think this is where that stat's misleading. I mean, number one, people might think that I'm a Lamar Jackson hater, but I'm really not. In fact, I think he's a remarkable young man. I think he's the type of guy that you want to build your franchise around. He works his ass off. The guys like him. The coaches like him. He's humble. He's not about himself. He just cares about winning. I mean, these are all the things that you want from your franchise QB in a big way. And on top of it, he's incredibly dynamic. He's led them to the playoffs multiple times. He's been an NFL MVP. I mean, frankly, what's not to like? Really, I mean, honestly, what's not to like? Now, he's not a conventional quarterback. But if you know me well enough, and I think the people that consider me a Lamar Jackson hater might only see me on Twitter, and that's where Twitter kind of gets wonky and sideways, that you don't really know the person. You just see something tweeted or whatnot, and then you just go all in, fangs out. But if you listen to the show, you know I really like finding non-traditional solutions, atypical solutions to traditional problems. And I love seeing that in sports. And Lamar Jackson is that. He's an atypical solution to a traditional problem. The traditional problem, obviously, is winning football games, moving the football on the ground and through the air. I think it's a misleading stat because he doesn't only throw the football. If you were going to tell me that Lamar Jackson in the last year plus hasn't had a combined 250 yards of running and passing, or hasn't gone over 300 yards running and passing, and these 51 stiffs had, okay, that's better context. But you're not comparing C.J. Beathard's effectiveness to Lamar Jackson. You're not comparing Jeff Driscoll's effectiveness to Lamar Jackson. It's misleading. Okay, those guys threw for more yards, but it wasn't like those guys gained more yards overall than Lamar Jackson. It wasn't like those guys won more games than Lamar Jackson. And ultimately, that's the only thing that matters. So I think that was an eye-catching stat that was misleading. Also, you have a guy like Trent Dilfer who was on the show yesterday. And Dilfer, I thought, had a really interesting point. I had asked him about the Monday night fumbles, two lost fumbles, which ultimately kind of caved the game in. And he said, look, Lamar Jackson plays a style of football where the risk of losing a fumble is far greater. When you have him in space, when you're running him on RPOs, when he's out there making things happen, ultimately he's taking shots that other quarterbacks simply aren't. But he's also creating more big plays than other quarterbacks are. So that's your trade-off, that it's not surprising that he would have more turnovers, that he would have more of those types of plays, because he creates bigger plays, and thus it's more boom or bust. Now look, if Lamar Jackson's going to run this much, he needs to be able to hold on to the football to a certain degree. And especially at overtime, pressure's coming, he holds the football out, he's trying to make these dynamic things happen, and then he's getting stripped, and then the football goes the other way, and the Raiders have the easy shot to win the game, which they take. You know, it's a headache. It's a headache. But this stat specifically is not important to me. Lamar Jackson doesn't need to throw for more yards. He just needs to be more protective of the football. Or if he's going to lose the football a couple of times, he's got to make it up with a couple of huge plays. A side-winding 69-yard run to the end zone makes up for two forced fumbles. You know, if you have that plus a 78-yard touchdown strike or a 51-yard touchdown pass, you know, it makes up for that. But that's the boom or bust. You have to have those other big plays to make it worth your while. But I'm not worried about Lamar Jackson, frankly, throwing for more yards. Now, speaking of young quarterbacks and whether they're throwing for enough yards, etc., Trent also said that he thinks that Daniel Jones, I didn't know where he was going to go, because I asked him about Daniel Jones and a terrible effort on Sunday and the Giants once again looking like puke. And I didn't know if he was going to say, yeah, you know, Daniel Jones isn't cut out for this and I haven't seen this on tape, yada, yada, yada. But he said he loves Daniel Jones and he thinks that it's going to be kind of an up and down year for him. But by next year, Daniel Jones, he believes, ultimately will grow into a steady, great franchise QB and ultimately be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL and one of the best players in the NFL. Now, Mraz, you ride this huge Giants roller coaster where you're high on them, you're low on them, you think they're going to go to the Super Bowl, then you see them in person, you think that they're going to lose 12 games this year and fire everybody, etc. So when I was asking Trent Dilfer about Daniel Jones, did you think Trent was going to be optimistic and complimentary?
No, because it is obviously a narrative and the easy thing to do is just to basically throw everything at Daniel Jones. So I was stunned that he said that, to be honest.
Because coming off of Sunday, it's hard to defend Daniel Jones. But then I thought about it. Is Dilfer the guy that rips apart young quarterbacks either? Or is he usually the guy that builds up young QBs?
I guess he's a guy that builds them up, but there's building them up and going out of your way to mention somebody as being one of the best players in the NFL in
True.
The near future.
So he says this, and all of our eyebrows raise on the show. Wow, you think Daniel Jones will be one of the best players in football? So we sent this clip out, and we tweeted out this clip, and then we posted it also on Facebook as well. And this made the rounds in New York amongst Giants fans. And so there was a pretty hotly contested debate yesterday about this take.
Huge. I was getting texts, this dope said this on your show, blah, blah, blah. And now there are listeners in New York to all the local stations in New York fighting each other, calling each other horrible names
really?
Over whether Trent Dilfer is credible enough and whether he's right enough. So apparently Trent Dilfer has really sent ripple effects in having Giant fans eat each other over whether or not he's right on Daniel Jones.
So what's the two sides of this take?
One is Jason Garrett stinks and he's done nothing to help Daniel Jones. And when he was a rookie, he did similar things to what Justin Herbert did statistically, which it might be factual. And there's the other take, which is if you're still fumbling it and turning the ball over for a 40th time now entering year three, then there's no saving you. And Trent Dilfer's a complete buffoon and you don't know what you're talking about if you believe Trent Dilfer.
I saw some takes that suggested you can't trust Trent Dilfer's takes because he wasn't very good at quarterback.
I hate that.
Why?
So what does that mean? And why, me, D.A., you or I weren't very good at quarterback, but we have eyes and we discuss. I hate the idea that if a guy isn't good, that means that he's a terrible analyst. Now, I will say I draw the line at if you run out of the back of the end zone, don't know where it is, then I don't necessarily know that I could trust you as an analyst. But I do think if you've played the position, you have two eyes. You know how it works in a locker room.
Yeah, so this is an interesting debate. If a guy wasn't great at football, can you trust his analysis? And my answer usually is absolutely, because they're two different skill sets. I mean, a guy that plays in the NFL doesn't necessarily make a great analyst. And a guy that's not very good in the NFL sometimes makes a great analyst. You know, I think Chris Collinsworth is one of the great analysts in football, and he had a good career, not a great career. He wasn't a great wide receiver in any way, shape, or form for the Cincinnati Bengals. When you look at Trent Dilfer, I mean, he did win a Super Bowl, so I kind of find it to be seriously stupid to be like, he wasn't good at quarterback. Okay, sure, he was a game manager for them, but he was also the starting quarterback of a team that won a Super Bowl. And he was a starting quarterback for more than a decade of the NFL. So he was at least good enough to start in the NFL for 10 years. I look at a guy like, you know, it's interesting. Joe Montana was never a good analyst. They tried him out after he retired. He was not very good. Bill Walsh was not a very good analyst on TV. You know, just because you're great also, like Magic Johnson stinks as an analyst. He's absolutely putrid as an analyst and his opinions on Twitter. So what does that mean? That a great player can be an analyst even though most great players have terrible insight, or right. Some great players. So I do find that take to be stupid, that it's two totally different skill sets. But I do wonder about Trent's analysis on this one, because you've watched every snap of every Daniel Jones start. Give me the argument that Jones can be a star.
I think that when surrounded by weapons and an offensive coordinator like he did with Pat Shurmur in his first year, and he could attack the ball down the field, he makes some really nice throws. The problem, again, is you look around, they don't score. At the end of games, when you're not scoring enough points, at some point, a quarterback has to be able to overcome everything not being perfect around them. Offensive line, offensive coordinator. And if in year three you can't overcome that, then you're just not a great quarterback, even if you think you can play in the league. So that's my against it. My for it would just be his rookie year is what I turned to. His fumbles were such an issue in his rookie year, but everything else looked so good. And the moment he got Jason Garrett last year, it was like he forgot how to play quarterback, and it's felt like more of the same.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room, to candid interviews with basketball legends, to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
On Sunday.
Yeah, he kind of keeps hitting his head against this ceiling that it feels like there should be more to Daniel Jones, but there's only so long you can wait for that more to happen. And he oftentimes wilts, and that's a problem in year three as a starting quarterback.
Only one letter separates them, but they're galaxies apart. One is a true winner. One is a pathetic loser. This is DA's Champ or Chump.
At the DA Show, you can watch each and every morning at watchda.com. The simulcast is cooking as always this morning. Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA, is pressing buttons and pulling levers. Back at Mission Control, so check us out. That's mobile-friendly, watchda.com, as well as on Twitch. Check out the CBS Sports Radio channel on Twitch. Our champ this morning is Arkansas head coach Sam Pittman. He has just one of the best stories in college football. Sam Pittman is an old offensive lineman that's been a career offensive line coach. He's bounced around to a million places over the last 30 years. He's been the offensive line coach at Hutchinson Community College, Northern Illinois, Oklahoma, Missouri, Kansas, back to Northern Illinois, UNC, Tennessee, Arkansas, Georgia. He has been a 30-year lifer in the trenches as an assistant coach. You know who doesn't get head coaching jobs at the SEC? That guy. And yet Sam Pittman gets the Arkansas job 2 years ago and immediately injects life into the program. And last year only goes 3-7, but it's so much better than Chad Morris and so much better than the dreck that was there the last couple of years. And last year they go 3-7, but have three field goal losses. So they are that close to being a six-win team. And now this year they have a signature victory on Saturday night when they absolutely pounded Texas in an old Southwest Conference rivalry in Fayetteville. It was a thoroughly dominant effort by an Arkansas team that is clearly on the build and really rubbing it in the face of Texas that thinks they can swagger into the SEC, collect checks, and be better than they are in the Big 12. Like I've said, careful what you wish for, but for Sam Pittman, what a story. 30 years grinding as an assistant coach on the offensive line, never becoming a head coach, then getting the gig at 58 years old, his first head coaching gig ever, and then having that signature win over Texas on Saturday, he is the champ.
That's DA's champ.
Your chump on the morning is Ohio State's defensive coordinator, Kerry Combs, because it was ugly last weekend in Columbus for him. And frankly, you can actually see the frustration and the anger on the face of Ryan Day in talking about what's going on that defense. They got humiliated, absolutely humiliated in that game against Oregon. And Ryan Day had some harsh words this week. And, you know, as a guy that probably never deserved to be a defensive coordinator, Combs has a lot of answering to do. And it was a joke. I mean, Oregon could tell them where they were going to run, and they still couldn't stop it. They obviously had absolutely no answer for the ground game of Oregon, and now has been, you know, a real problem throughout the first two games of the season. I mean, Minnesota ran the football, went up and down on them, and Combs looks like an absolute disaster. So, you know, Ohio State's defense promises changes, promises better efforts. Day says we're looking at everything, that he had, quote, real conversations with his staff. He said, I'd rather not share the conversations. When you say that, obviously, it was stern, it was stiff, it was angry. But Kerry Combs, his crew man, an absolute nightmare on Saturday. And there's a lot of reason to believe that Ohio State's not going to quite get this right this year because that defense has a lot of work to do. He's your chump.
That's DA's chump. Class is now dismissed.
You know, and how much of Combs's ascent to that DC spot had to do because he was friends with Urban Meyer and assisted under Urban Meyer for six seasons at Ohio State. You know, always felt like, really? Him? There? I mean, you gotta be able to fix that defense on the fly, and Ryan Day is not a defensive guy. So what happens? Hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS. Again, DA on CBS. Follow me and tweet at me there. You could also follow me and tweet at me on, or follow me and hit me up on Instagram as well, because I am documenting the entire trip to Idaho. We are this morning in McCall, Idaho, which is a couple of hours north of Boise. It's right on Lake Payette, and it's beautiful, a mountain resort town, about a mile elevation up. We're about 5,000 feet up. In fact, yesterday got to climb even higher and check out some of the big ravines and mountains at about 6,000 feet up, just absolutely gorgeous. And we're here at a boutique hotel called the Glass House, and it was built in the 50s, so it's got really cool, funky architecture from that era, mid-century modern. It's all tricked out with that style and that era of furniture, and it overlooks the lake, and it's part of the Hotel McCall. And it's really cool. It's where we're broadcasting from. So if you actually are watching, go to watchda.com or following me on Instagram. I posted a picture there. You see how unique the backdrop is. So it's a really cool town. And we had a great day yesterday kind of looking around the town and going to see some of the sights and seeing the lake, et cetera, and seeing the mountains. So it's very cool. And I am very excited to report that the heat has kicked on, because we have the double doors open out to the deck to look out over the lake. And the stars are out still. It's still the sun hasn't risen yet here. And it's freezing. It's like 38 degrees, 39 degrees, and it's blowing right through. And we need this heat kicking on. So thank goodness. Thank goodness. Ryan tweets, hey, great interview with Scott Studwell, DA. I'm glad he didn't cut his own interview short and wasn't pushing Spam with Smirnoff cotton candy seltzer water. A plate of Spam fries takes 1.3 years off of your life. Yesterday, Mark Schlereth joined us on the show, and I don't think he was specifically pushing Spam. Was he, Maras? He was pushing tailgating recipes. He always has like four different sponsors when he comes on.
Yes, and I know one specifically was Smirnoff. Also, he started with a certain TV company. But now that I think about it, Spam might have been one of them, DA, and he was just giving you an alternative of what to do with the Spam.
Hey, guys, I got a roll. I got another interview set up.
He did enjoy cutting off the interview at the end of the show. At the end of the interview, which never happens. The guest never says, I'm out of here.
It's not a party without meatballs.
He was talking about Spam French fries. Now that I think of it, I guess he was pushing Spam.
I guess probably not true. A good job as the pitch man if we don't remember what he was pushing the next day.
Well, look, we don't remember which TV company it was either. So it just... You know, when some guys just rip through a million different pitches, you don't, it just is in one ear, out the other. But now that I think of it, I guess he must have been pushing Spam because he went into a full Spam recipe thing.
All you're getting is Spam.
And so he said he loves Spam. His wife is from Hawaii, I believe he said, and so they love Spam in Hawaii. And he was talking about making Spam French fries. And I said, what are Spam French fries? And he said, cut up Spam into the shape of French fries and then fry them. You can either fry them in an air fryer or, I guess, in an oven or a deep fryer. But he said it's got the consistency of French fries, but none of the carbs.
It's a healthy alternative.
Put ume in there, for crying out loud.
Ume. He wanted ume on those Spam fries. And I was thinking about this yesterday because, of course, this show consumes my life, and I thought that for the football food of the week, Mraz, are you not now legally obligated to do something Spam-centric for one of your football foods of the week, maybe even this week?
Well, so I really thought about this last night as well, DA, because, of course, this is the things we think about that are more important. The heck with guests, it's do we go Spam fries on the football food of the week? I owe it to a listener because I did a lot of research on something they teased on Target Demo Friday last week, and I really fell in love with it to do that this week. But I think out of intrigue, out of respect for Mark Schlereth cutting off the interview, Spam might have to resurface. And as we've said, we've done over like 169 recipes since the football week, food of the week started. We've never used Spam. And frankly, let's be honest, you might be out of ideas soon. Spam, it's an extended season. We have that one extra week. Spam might find its way onto the menu this year.
We've done over 160 football food of the week. So that means we've done 170?
I believe. Well, yeah, I guess that's a good
point. Very specific. Over 169 recipes have been delivered.
Good point. We've hit 170. Now, I've definitely doubled up on a couple for sure, spaced out by years, but yeah.
A couple of dips.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, have you ever heard of the French onion dip with bacon? That was a good one.
Tomorrow morning, we're broadcasting live from Dutch Bros in Boise, the one in Milwaukee, so we encourage everybody to come by and watch the show. On Friday morning show, we're actually at a restaurant called Simply Bacon.
Oh.
And
I'm
reminded of Mraz for one football food of the week doing French onion dip with bacon. And that with bacon has become a pretty infamous drop on the show. And I think that maybe we've created this
French onion dip with bacon.
And we said, like, that's not a football food of the week. That's just dip with bacon. You just
with bacon.
Bacon to just a can of dip. You could open up a can of dip and bacon
to it. Food. It's a good snack.
All you're getting is a spam.
With bacon.
So on Friday, we're actually at a place called Bacon. And I think this is one of those things where you speak it into existence. Mraz said with bacon. We've played with bacon on the air so often that it became a drop for Dave Friedman to do during a Winthrop game.
With bacon.
And now we're actually doing a show from a place called Bacon.
Bacon.
It's the DA show literally with bacon.
Bacon. The DA show at Bacon. Bacon.
French onion dip. At bacon.
With bacon.
It's done to news. At bacon.
Bacon.
Oh, I'm starving.
Mraz, I'm killing you here. I know. Actually, maybe not, because maybe you've put down Instagram, because all those Broncos fans have been killing you.
Oh.
But I posted the picture of my salmon Benedict from Goldie's yesterday.
I saw it. I joined Prater in the ballgame in the afternoon yesterday. They gave me the menu of everywhere you're going. It's disheartening. DA, I've become such a hater. I'm in the control room with Pete the Body, and I'm oh, does he have to do a show in the mountains? That stinks. I am throwing cold water on everything you're doing because I just really wish I was there. So I've become the biggest sour hater. Just, this is a stupid show. Why is he doing this? Like, I'm become that guy because I'm so tired of looking at your food in the menu, and I know what I'm doing.
Explain to me why you think this is a stupid show to do.
It's not, but I wish I was there. I wish I took the 3-hour drive and I was staring at this beautiful lake and the beautiful pictures you put up on Instagram. So because I'm not there, now it's a stupid show. That's why. That's the only sole reason why.
So you're going to go to this doctor's appointment on Friday, and they're actually going to delay the birth until next week?
Well, no.
You literally could have come?
It's not a delaying of the birth. Doctor, last night we went, and basically the fear here was that the baby is not, like, turned around enough, so, and it's, like, stuck in place like Spider-Man, so the thought was we might have to do, maybe it's like a C-section or induced labor or whatever, and the doctor was going to be very big on us. We got, I guess, good news for Danielle that the baby did a big turnaround and as basically like a plane on a runway has positioned itself for takeoff.
Oh, wow.
But because of that positioning, the doctors now are no longer in fear of needing to schedule some kind of inducing, which could have happened by the end of this week, which might have been on Friday, say. Now they have told her we are at 36 weeks or 37, whatever that is. Basically, within the next 2 weeks, if the baby does not come naturally, then we go back to the inducing situation. So now they believe while the baby is in place, it's probably going to hold out for at least another week, meaning I could have made this trip. I say that and watch an hour from now, I'll have a baby. Who knows?
Gaga.
Again, the worst case scenario for Mraz is he stayed home because of the baby potentially being born, and that we have this trip. We come home, there's a few days in between, and then the baby comes well after that, and then he could have made the trip. That will, I know you're already going to resent Peyton, but that, in that, this case, that hypothetical, you'll really resent.
It's haunting. This entire situation has haunted me deeply. This week is haunting me. The fact that I would love to be in some kind of boat fishing and being one of the four people, you know, holding an enormous marlin or whatever the heck you're catching there.
Sturgeon.
I would love to basically be sniffing around a place called Bacon. I hate every part of this. Absolutely hate every part of this. And it's just salt in the wound. Like, you know, every text I get from DA, hey, can you reach out to this one? Look what we're doing here. Every Instagram picture. And I am sitting there basically last night eating bad cauliflower pizza and watching Elmo's Playhouse for the fourth time going, my life sucks.
I asked you to reach out to Jake Plummer because Plummer's been a friend of the show for years, and he lives in Idaho, and I've been told that he oftentimes comes down to a Boise State game, so I wanted to see if he was going to be in town. Did he respond to your text?
Well, I called 1-800-JAKE-PLUMMER last night. I didn't get an answer. Oh. But no, I've gotten no response. No response.
Maybe it's the wrong number.
Yeah, I mean, the last time that I had Jake Plummer answer me was 7 years ago, so it's potentially the wrong number. But I have also now
just had him on.
No, we didn't. When?
That was
2014.
No.
Yes.
We just had him on over the summer. He was promoting some CBD thing.
Are you shit? Was I on vacation?
I guess maybe if you don't remember it. That's why I asked you to do it, because you just had Jake Plummer on.
I know I booked Jake Plummer and I have Jake Plummer's number, but I knew it was like our second year of overnights was the last time I had him
on. No, we've had Jake Plummer on at least 4 or 5 times.
All right, I'm going to go back through the emails. Maybe I was on vacation. I wonder if this was a Connor Green Aiden thing, and now I'm getting upended here.
It must have been. Who's produced the show over the summer and even out?
Connor
has.
Rubinoff.
Get me Rubinoff?
Yeah, and Aiden took care of guests. I will go back and I'll do my due diligence. I did have a number for him. I did reach out. I was going to do a little more digging on publicists and stuff today.
What?
What? 1-800 Jake Plummer has too many digits.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that was a joke. I didn't really call 1-800 Jake Plummer.
Take off the R.
Who produces the show when Sean is in, by the way? Because I'm wondering when he's not around, who's right in charge. When he's here, who would have booked Jake Plummer?
Right, and that's exactly how I felt yesterday when everybody was ragging on Trent Dilfer, and they said, well, who cares what he has to say? And I thought to myself, well, I basically only book quarterbacks that haven't been successful in the NFL, so who cares what anyone has to say then?
Yeah, when's Whedon booked back for this show? Thursday?
Elvis Gerbach's on next week.
Well, okay, we got to figure out who booked Jake Plummer on this show.
That's such a disconnect. DA's like, we just had him with the CBD oil. I'm going, I haven't had him since 2014.
He did a Canadian bacon, didn't he?
But to be fair, DA, there have been times you have thought things were like a month ago, and they have been like 3 years earlier.
That is true, but I don't think I thought he was on this summer, and it was 2014. I think it was more recently than that.
And Cap has found the last time he saw Jake Plummer on the show was Sunday Morning Football, which I don't produce, in 2017.
Okay. Well, if I thought this summer was Sunday Morning Football 2017, I need to cut alcohol out of my life.
Well, I need to go back to 3 Sunday Morning Football producers ago to see if they have the contact.
Do you remember if you asked Jake how Tebow would pan out as the Broncos quarterback? That might put a timestamp on him.
By the way, here's a workaround. Everybody in Boise keeps saying Jake Plummer. Ask one of them to see if he can come by on Friday.
Just stand outside his CBD, his favorite CBD joint.
He's outside of the bacon restaurant.
DA's next to 15 people with Jake Plummer's number. He's got me digging through emails, 7 years old.
Could ask the barista at Dutch Bros. Hey, has Jake Plummer ever come in here for a latte? We meet him on Friday's show.
Hey, he was in here yesterday. Called 1-800-JAKE-PLUMBER. Drop the R.
We're going to hold a sign outside downtown Boise.
We have Jake Plummer on every week, Mraz. What are you talking about?
I need Jake Plummer's phone number for food. AB has our headline this morning. Mr. Bogues, what do we got?
We got headlines sponsored by 5-Hour Energy. It's the one when you got to get stuff done. Drink it in seconds, feel it in minutes, last for hours. Tastes great, too. 5-Hour Energy.
Oh,
nobody
in
the NL wildcard chase won last night, except for the Cardinals.
The pitch to Kisner. A swing and a base hit to center field. That's going to score Rondon. It's going to score Sosa. The Cardinals have a 3-run 11th and lead 7-4.
That's John Rooney on Cards Radio. St. Louis 3, top 11. Gave up 2 in the bottom half before beating the Mets 7-6. So the Redbirds take a half-game lead on the Reds for the second wild card since he has dropped 6 of 8 with last night's 6-5 defeat in Pittsburgh. Manager David Bell.
Not to say it's easy. I mean, we have to turn this around. We know that. And I'm completely confident and feel it turning, and it's going to happen.
Padres a game behind the Cards after an 8-4 loss at Dodger Stadium. The Phillies are 3 back after a 6-3 home loss to the Cubs, and the Mets are 4 behind. The Dodgers, by the way, by beating those Diamondbacks, have now clinched a playoff spot. Over in the AL, the Jays lost to the Rays 2-0. The Yankees dumped the O's 7-2, and the Red Sox won in Seattle 8-4. All of that creates a virtual tie with Toronto, New York, and Boston for the AL wild cards. The A's took a a 10-7 loss in KC. They've dropped 3 in a row and 7 of 10, and the White Sox beat the Angels 9-3. The Saints are in the NFL's enhanced protocols with Michael Thomas, 6 assistant coaches, and 1 nutritionist testing positive for COVID. This means no in-person meetings, daily testing, and everyone wearing masks. The Saints play in Carolina on Sunday. The Niners have signed former Lion running back Kerryon Johnson to their practice squad because Raheem Mostert has opted for season-ending knee surgery. The Niners first said Mostert would miss 8 weeks with Sunday's injury. John Wall reportedly will not play again for the Rockets. He wants a trade, and the team apparently helping him find one. Houston plans to start Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green at guard for the coming season. Aaron Gordon now signing a 4-year, $92 million extension in Denver after being traded there in the spring. And from MLS, NYCFC and FC Dallas played to a 3-3 draw, and Columbus topped Red Bull 2-1 to get within 1 point of a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. And now, we're done.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
It's kind of like scientists are now doing research for two reasons. One, to figure something out for the benefit of all of us, and two, to get mentioned on this show. A cow's number one and number two, very bad for the environment. First of all, there is a lot of both, and when they mix together, they create ammonia, that and other substances in the waste-contained water supplies. So this needs to be addressed. And this apparently began as a joking question, what if, but then it became a full scientific study in Germany. Scientists have potty trained 11 of 15 cows in this experiment. The calves have the intelligence equivalent of a 2 to 4 year old, so they're Sean-ish. Some learn to pee in a special pen in as quickly as 2 weeks, and like with kids, researchers used special treats to entice the cows. As ridiculous as this sounds, if it can actually be done on a large scale, this would be a significant way to help reduce gas house emissions.
So wait a second. I know that methane, which is cow farts, is really bad for the environment. Opens up that ozone layer, climate change, global warming, etc. But just having them fart in the potty, how is that any different for the environment?
I think because then they could clean it and control it better. It would be all in one place, and I guess it would be easy to, if recycle is the right word, but if they could do it in a centralized location instead of spreading the wealth across all of the land, then it might be easier to keep a handle on.
Oh, what a smelly job.
So it's more like if they can get them into an enclosed area, they could probably filtrate that air better to maybe make the methane a little bit less potent.
Yeah, but number one's also involved in this too. It's not just number two. Like all of the waste product out of a cow is not good, especially when they do one on top of the other, apparently, and
is
there's some mixing.
There's gas coming off of the number one as well, like when you eat asparagus?
Oh. Yeah. Well, let the scientist, Sean, go.
Oh, I was just going to say this. You mentioned that the ones and twos, mixing them like a DJ would from the cow, forms ammonia. So does that mean when we clean like a table or a television with Windex, it's actually cow one and two?
Oh, come on.
Well, that's ammonia, right? How do they make ammonia if that's what's producing? Can't you recycle that and make cleaning products then?
Ammonia is its own chemical product. It's its own chemical compound. Not all ammonia comes from cow urine.
Well, but if now you could recycle this and not ruin the ozone layer, can't you then recycle it into forming cleaning products and now
perhaps,
release a win?
Yes, down the road, yes. I guess I suppose there could be a way to reuse cow urine in your Windex. But when you use Windex, you're not using cow urine. You're using, made in a lab, its own ammonia.
Well, but what are they using in a lab? Maybe they're using cows, ones, and twos. I think we're finding a good way to recycle products here. This is good.
There's nitrogen in the urine that mixes, I guess, with the gases in the poop to make the ammonia. Oh. So that's where they're getting the standalone substance is what they're mixing to make
so
your cleaning
products.
So
because the cow goes number two and then goes number one on the number two it's created, it's not just the number one?
Ugh. So they're each individually bad, but when they mix together and make ammonia, that's its own separate problem.
Gotcha. So it's like a high school volcano problem.
Basically.
Mr. Wizard.
If it's that bad that they're mixing, why are we putting him in the back of Buicks at McDonald's drive-thrus then?
Now, what a shame, because cows are so tasty, and they give us so many good things. Milk, steak,
eggs,
hamburgers, your entire dairy aisle, according to Mraz.
Butter.
Yogurt. I think they make Doritos, too, if you ask nicely.
Mraz, they do give us butter.
Because of the milk.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you don't, like, take a piece of the cow and it's a stick of butter.
No. No.
You might. You're turning the cow into a 7-Eleven. You go in, you cut off an arm, you got some butter, head to the back, get your cleaning supplies. It's not a convenience store.
What part of the cow is the Slim Jim?
Yeah.
Hooves or ruffles? Is that where they
can come? I get some lotto tickets out of the ear?
And a taquito, please.
And what does the... Oh, the headline says scientists are trying to potty train cows to use the moo-loo. That's what they're calling this?
Oh, yes.
Always something catchy. Who wrote that, D.A.?
It's coming up on Swing or a Miss on PGP. Moo-loo.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know. Maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
Yesterday we had Trent Dilfer on the show, and I asked Trent Dilfer about Daniel Jones, if he's got the goods, and he said yes. He said he believes Daniel Jones is not far away from being one of the best players in the NFL. Our question today, is Trent Dilfer crazy for thinking Daniel Jones can be one of the best players in the league? 89% of you believe yes, Dilfer's nuts. Trent Dilfer was the first starting QB to be released after winning a Super Bowl, although to be fair to the Ravens, that ends up historically looking like a mistake because they ended up going, was it Chris Redman they went to? Who am I forgetting on this? Kyle Bowler, right? They went to Kyle Bowler, I think, the next year, and it was all overall just a disaster. So
Elvis Gerbach.
Oh, they went to Gerbach the year after?
Yes, that was the big signing, from Kansas City.
Oh, you wrote that in this. Sorry about that, Bilotti.
You got to see his hand pounding his face that he wrote it.
I'm so sorry. It actually says there he was replaced by Elvis Gerbach. And then the 0-1 Ravens led by Gerbach were featured in the first season of Hard Knocks. And then after that, they drafted Bowler. So really, after they let Dilfer go, they never won big again. So historically speaking, that decision seems stupid. You know, Dilfer wasn't great, but he actually helped them win a Super Bowl. Dilfer is in the Fresno County Athletic Hall of Fame. Oh, that's too funny. Mraz, you've got to paint the picture of Bilotti getting furious at me there.
So Pete takes so much pride in writing all of the advanced analytics, and today was not our normal quirky food question. So, you know, he came up with some, you know, NFL Trent Dilfer factoids.
Oh, my goodness.
And you are stumbling over who replaced him.
Oh, my goodness.
And he wrote flat out Elvis Gerbach in what he sent you, and he starts pounding the desk in front of him as you're saying it, and I'm giving you an Elvis Gerbach. And then he takes both of his hands, and he starts slamming himself in the face because he doesn't want to get caught on air, and he goes, it's right there. It's right in front of you. Why am I writing anything if he won't read it? It's right in front of him.
That's the first time ever in the history of sentences that I saw somebody not read the next sentence.
Stop reading. Yeah, I just stopped. In the middle of the sentence, I stopped reading and started thinking on my own. And see, that's the problem with thinking on my own.
He
should just never do that.
He beat himself up like it was Fight Club, D.A., punching himself in the face that you would not read the next sentence.
I should just be Ron Burgundy and just read what is put in front of me. Stop thinking, D.A. Stop thinking. Just read.
Oh, man. You look like an NFL player that committed a personal foul penalty and the head coach was going nuts. That's
just
what
nuts on
like.
Me. Just nuts. I'm like that Lions player. Was it Okuda that just got absolutely lambasted on the sideline the other day?
I didn't see that. That's funny.
It's like you lined up on the other side of the line.
So a couple of things here on interviews that we've had. Mraz, looks like that Trent Dilfer calling Daniel Jones a would-be star is making some news, huh?
Yeah, it's picking up steam in the tri-state area. Now, NJ.com has written about it. I've gotten a response from the New York Post asking me the proper accreditation for it. So it feels like Trent Dilfer is going to be a big story. It's funny how these things happen a day after. It's not even the day we happen. But a big story, it's blowing up today, and people just in New York wanting to crush Trent Dilfer who hate Daniel Jones.
So this is such a funny, like, weird roundabout reaction. Dilfer on our airwaves says that Daniel Jones can be a star. And in New York, instead of Trent Dilfer being lauded for seeing something that others don't, is being roundly booed
yes.
because nobody else believes what Trent Dilfer believes.
Right, you would think you would be looking for any sort of hope for your franchise and people who are in the know in the NFL seeing hope, but instead they want to crush you for seeing hope for your franchise. You can't win.
And now the flip side of this is that JerMichael Finley joined me on Sunday Morning Football, and JerMichael took a run at Aaron Rodgers, which he has done in the past. He played for the Packers for six seasons. He won a Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers. But he has said this in the past, that Aaron Rodgers can be difficult to deal with. And I asked him about the offseason and, of course, this kind of protracted battle between Rodgers and the Packers organization. And he kind of said, yes, you know, Aaron Rodgers, he's the franchise, but you pay him all of that money, and then he gets to be the GM. If you pay him that money and you give him that control, he gets to call his shots. And when he gets to call his shots, this is what happens. You deal with that. And I, look, did I think that there's probably a little angst still left over from something that went awry with JerMichael Finley? Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a bias there. He played with Aaron Rodgers, and clearly it didn't end favorably. But now our interview and that clip is getting skewered on social media by Packers fans that want to blast the messenger. Hey, man, I don't know what you want me to tell you. JerMichael Finley is interesting, and he's credible because he's not just some wannabe blogger that's throwing a dart at Aaron Rodgers. He played with the guy. And he played with the guy and said he's difficult to deal with. And did we not just see an offseason that showed how difficult he is to deal with? So, you know, it's interesting because fans are so protective of their guys. And obviously it's easier today and will be forever to be protective of Aaron Rodgers than JerMichael Finley. Rodgers is going to the Hall of Fame first ballot gold jacket. JerMichael Finley played six seasons and career cut short due to injury. So who are you going to line up on the side of? Whose bandwagon do you want to be on? But Finley taking a run or saying something critical of Aaron Rodgers doesn't automatically make Finley discredited, which is what you know, what so many people want to do. Oh, what has he ever done? He hasn't played in a million years. He just wants attention. You know, I don't know what you want me to say. I don't know what you want me to do. Here is a guy that played with Aaron Rodgers. Now, if I get on a guy like, I don't know, pick your former Packer that has said unbelievably nice things about Aaron Rodgers, then that's fine. So you only want a certain kind of former Packer. This is a former teammate. He has something slightly critical, which I think is seemingly very on point after what we just saw. And it's, he hasn't played in 100 years, D.A., he hates Aaron Rodgers. Why would you give him the platform, D.A.? Yada, yada, yada. Hey, a former teammate that's going to speak openly about his experience is just as valuable, whether it's a positive experience or a negative experience. And, you know, sometimes fans could just be babies. They could just flat out be babies. I'm not saying this, but if I did, I would hope that it would be somewhat credible, considering I don't just launch grenades for no reasons. You know, I have my thoughts and I have my opinions and, you know, I talk to sources, etc. I do my homework. But this is a guy that actually played for him, played with him. And you just want to discredit him because it's not what you want to hear. You know, sorry, Like, life's not always that way. Sometimes you get stuff you don't want to hear. Sometimes you get news you don't want. Sometimes people tell you things that are hard. Sometimes the truth is hard. You're telling me you don't think Aaron Rodgers is difficult to deal with? You don't think so? You think he's just a breeze every single day? Now, Rodgers is an amazing player. And I've said I consider myself lucky to have witnessed this career because it's brilliant. But, you know, he can be a pouty baby sometimes. And one of his former teammates says that. Don't hate the messenger. Either me or Jermichael Finley. It's what his thought is. And he's absolutely able to express his thoughts without, you know, getting trashed by everybody. I mean, come on. All right, let's get to your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. Mraz is, I mean, the epic fail could be me not reading Pete's sentence there as part of advanced analytics. But what did we go with?
We're going to go with Jake Plummer and you not remembering when we had him on.
Me not remembering? We now have physical evidence that he was on in 2017 Sunday Morning Football and last November Sunday Morning Football.
You said this summer. You said a couple months ago.
Well, we're still double-checking that. That could be you said 2014. Anyway, here it is. Your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
I asked you to reach out to Jake Plummer because Plummer's been a friend of the show for years, and he lives in Idaho, and I've been told that he oftentimes comes down to a Boise State game, so I wanted to see if he was going to be in town. Did he respond to your text?
Well, I called 1-800-JAKE-PLUMMER last night.
Jake Plummer joining us on the DA show. Jake, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good, DA. Thanks for having me on the show.
I didn't get an answer, but no, I've gotten no response. No response.
Maybe it's the wrong number.
Yeah, I mean, the last time that I had Jake Plummer answer me was 7 years ago, so it's potentially the wrong number. But I have also now...
We just had him on.
No, we didn't. When?
Dude,
that was 2014.
No.
Yes.
We just had him on over the summer. He was promoting some CBD thing.
Oregon as well as Arizona, both with one loss.
Who produces the show when Sean is in, by the way? Because I'm wondering when he's not around, who's in charge. When he's here, who would have booked Jake Plummer?
Right, and that's exactly what I felt yesterday when everybody was ragging on Trent Dilfer, and they said, well, who cares what he has to say? And I thought to myself, well, I basically only book quarterbacks that haven't been successful in the NFL, so who cares what anyone has to say then?
Yeah, when's Whedon booked back for the show? Thursday?
Elvis Gerbach's on next week.
Well, okay, we got to figure out who booked Jake Plummer on this show.
That's such a disconnect. DA's like, we just had him with the CBD oil. I'm going, I haven't had him since 2014.
It's 100 years ago you're talking about. Things have changed.
Well, he did a Canadian bacon, didn't he?
But to be fair, DA, there have been times you have thought things were like a month ago, and they have been like 3 years early.
That is true, but I don't think I thought he was on this summer, and it was 2014. I think it was more recently than that.
And Cap has found the last time he saw Jake Plummer on the show was Sunday Morning Football, which I don't produce, in 2017.
Thanks so much for carving out some time. We'll have to do it again.
Hey, DA, thank you. And you say carving reminds me, I got to go carve my pumpkin.
Well, if I thought this summer was Sunday Morning Football 2017, I need to...
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
I found the tweet where Plummer joined me on Sunday Morning Football in November, so less than a year ago. We have Sunday Morning Football from 2017. We don't know if I'm... though right on this summer. There's got to be a way we can find this. I looked in my emails, and I can't find any reference of Jake Plummer from this past summer.
Yeah, our podcast searchables go back to at least April with no Jake Plummer podcasted as an interview since April.
Really?
So I don't know when. Maybe you dreamt that you interviewed Jake Plummer this summer?
Could I be remembering November as this past summer?
Oh, knowing you as long as I do, you absolutely could be remembering November as this summer.
Wow. Oh, boy, that is concerning. I'm only 42 years old. Dementia's already setting in. Got to get out of this business. This is warping my brain.
Now, to be fair, I was wrong. That wasn't the 2014 wasn't the last time we had him on. So there's some kind of happy medium between the both of us.
Well, yeah, I mean, last November is relatively recently, so we can try to get him on.
Yes. I've reached out to an email we've gotten. I've reached out to Connor Green. We're going to try to work this out here.
By the way, what'd you think about Nick Sirianni showing video of himself playing high school basketball to the Eagles before this game and winning?
I mean, who am I to judge? We have a columnist at CBSSportsRadio.com that refers to himself as a college basketball practice player as a reference. So I'm assuming the Eagles are kind of like us. Yeah, a little ridiculous. How could that fire you up to beat the Falcons by watching that? But I guess it worked.
It really did. It worked. All right, so tomorrow morning we are broadcasting live from Dutch Bros on Milwaukee in downtown Boise. So if you are listening in the Boise area, come down, watch the show with us. It'll be open to everybody. It's starting at 4 a.m. local time, 6 a.m. Eastern time, but the doors will be open because it's a 24/7 Dutch Bros for your coffee and getting ready in the morning, etc. Then tomorrow afternoon, I'm at the Stagecoach with the afternoon show, so be there. And then tomorrow, Bogues also begins his brewery tours, and you can join him for some local craft breweries. And, you know, the local craft beer scene in Idaho is just phenomenal. So I've got all of the details of where we're going to be, when we're going to be there, where Bogues is going to be on my Instagram. So follow me for the sights, the sounds, the event schedule, everything there at Damon Amendo. Even if you're not in Boise, follow along for the trip and see how it's going. It's going to culminate in the Boise State-Oklahoma State game coming up on Saturday. Thanks to our guys at Mission Control, Sean Mraz, executive producer, Pete the Body Bellotti on the Wheels of Steel and audio director, Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA, and Andrew Bogish on your headlines. Thanks to KJ back here at our Mission Control on site. Thanks to the Glass House in McCall, part of the Hotel McCall, which has hosted us today, and it's absolutely beautiful. More pictures on my Instagram of that. I'm going fishing today in the canyons. Wish me good luck. Hope I see you in the morning. The Mothership disconnects.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.